Hey, everybody.
Let me tell you guys that I am so excited. I am so happy. I am really so thrilled to be right now sharing this amazing, glorious, super and exciting moment of my
episode
life.
Initiated.
Yeah. This is episode number 22.
Yeah, because yesterday we did the one with Robert, which was 21.
Ah.
Student loans, interesting stuff. If you have student loans, if you're European like us and Mr. Walter in the corner, you're pretty happy you don't have to worry about this, I guess. Do you have much student loans in Germany or no?
No.
No, okay. Well, today we're going to talk about some interest rates.
Who benefits, who suffers, how much sense it makes.
Yeah, and the current situation of pretty negative and low interest rates. So how do we actually come to this situation, Bill? Where did it start?
Our little story of today starts in around 2009, when there happened a financial crisis.
Yeah,
a little bit, you might have heard about it.
And the little Red Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we need to explain for that what interest rates are, what a low interest rate environment is, and what quantitative easing is.
Yeah, so basically in 2007, you had a financial crisis. It's good, because even last episode it was
proper.
Yeah, so anyways, in 2007, you had the financial crisis. A lot of asset prices were inflated because you had these assets that were in the market that were basically junk. And then in order, we're not going to get deep into what happened because we discussed this, I think, 2-3 times already. And basically, in order to kind of save the market from going into a depression, the Fed had to engage with the government, I think, in quantitative easing strategies, where they were buying these assets from banks and basically giving them cash for it so they would have money in the system. And when the government and the Fed actually engaged in buying assets, that created kind of a fake demand.
In the market. It's economic theory. You buy all these securities. The central bank buys the securities. There is now more money supply for the banks available, and this
and you increase the demand.
Yeah, gives the banks more money to lend.
Yeah, that's true. It gives the banks more money to lend, which is important because when you have a crisis, nobody wants to lend money because nobody is sure that anybody is going to pay you back. So, basically with quantitative easing, the assets were inflated. We even have the effects of this today, where if you have a crisis happens and then the central banks go into quantitative easing, starts buying assets, and the price of assets goes up because of the demand of the assets goes up, and the relative supply stays the same. And who benefits from this? It's people who actually own assets, which is usually the rich 10-1% of people. Currently, I think it's 1% that own more money than the 40%, than the bottom 40%, at least in the United States. And what that makes is that you basically have a limited wage growth, but at the same time, people who are owning assets are now earning much more because their assets are worth more. And this way, I have Mr. Bezos. I mean, not really, but people who own assets are worth more, and the richer become rich, while the poorer stay poor.
Yeah. So with quantitative easing, you actually try to spur economic growth. And nice, that was so nicely audible. So you want to spur economic growth, but what you normally do, you redistribute wealth to the rich, accidentally.
That's the consequence, because you inflate the value of the assets, and people who own the assets are people who have, not the have-nots,
yeah.
Basically.
And if you do not have enough excess income to qualify for loans or to actually...
That would be the interest rates part, right?
Yeah, because as a first step, you do quantitative easing.
Yes.
And
that's what we
in combination
with
that, yeah, and in combination with that, you
lower the rates, right?
Lower the interest rates.
And the reason why you lower the interest rates is because it makes lending money cheaper. So if you take, I want to lend you some money and interest rates, I don't know, I'm lending you $100 and interest rate is 1%, you have to pay me $1 of interest when you pay me back, or but if I charge you 10%, you have to pay me $10 of interest either every year on or on top of the loan that I gave you. So it makes lending easier, and there is more money in theory, and there's more money in the economy. But the problem with this case was that you had, and currently also have, like the 40% of the population in the States, which earns, I think, like around $33,000 per year, and well, to 40,000. And we know this actually, that you don't really qualify for debt, right? You're not really, you can't really get a debt because you're not, you don't earn enough, right? The banks are not that willing to give you money, because even for a credit card, you have to put a deposit because you don't have, there's just not enough money in your bank account to, I think there was a study where it showed that average American would struggle, I think 50% of the population would struggle to pull out of their bank account $400 in a case of an emergency. No. So what we were saying, just to go back with interest rates, you lower the interest rates, the money should flow easier, and then people should get debt and spend more money. But since a lot of people don't even qualify to get the debt or a loan from a bank, you don't have this effect, right?
Yeah, so a lot of people are not included in this effect. So at the end of the day, the predicted effect doesn't set on?
In the way that it's predicted, it doesn't. Ideally, the consumer should get, let's say, the loan. You borrow from your future self, you have more money now. And then when you go and spend this money, you create inflation, right? And then you balance the interest rates and inflation.
Because low interest rate environment is made first to spur economic growth by ease the flow of money, and also to prevent deflation, that means very, very low inflation, and drive
negative inflation.
Yeah,
negative
inflation.
And then when you drive up the inflation, basically you do it by consuming. You increase the demand, everybody's buying more things because now they have more money, because either they got a car loan, so they want to buy a car or whatever. And we're not going to go deep into this, but this is the result. And the economy is like, then the inflation goes up, and then you raise slowly the interest rates to kind of balance these two ledgers. But as you can see today, what's the inflation rate in the United States?
10 years later?
Yeah,
it
inflation
hasn't really
rate in the United
out.
States is, I think, like 1.2% or something like this.
That's
and
sure
and just the benchmark for healthy economy is 2%. While at the same time you have the markets which are hitting the records, right? The record levels, and the equity markets and the stocks are valued at a high rate. So basically, you can ask yourself why this is happening, and I think you can just Google this, Bill, and why this is happening. And the main reason is this distribution of income, and the fact that the low interest impact. You can Google this, you know.
No, it used to be better. The website. I'm on the website of the Bureau of the Fiscal Service.
Okay.
And
anyways,
then
I'm
going to
continue explaining this. So basically, what happens is that low interest rate don't impact the general population because they don't have enough money to be impacted by it. So who benefits from the low interest are the rich people, who are still taking loans and they can still leverage themselves, which means that they get a lot of free money, or like easy money, what we can call it. They don't have to pay a lot of interest, and now they have tons of money which they are going to invest. And since the cost of that money is low, they're going to go for riskier investments. They're not going to go for they're going to go for riskier investments, but at the same time, due to the political situation, a lot of people are telling me.
10-year yield curve, 10-year yield is 1.73 as of today. No, as of 1.84.
I asked you for the inflation.
The inflation.
Yeah. But this is also the yield curve. Anyways, and then when they... that's why you have these companies that are... Yeah, the current inflation is 1.8. No, that's for July this year. So, yeah. So it's around 1.8, 1.55 is the
inflation. We're close to the 2% market.
So it's close, but the economy is, many are saying, is at the end of the cycle. So right, the economy should be very hot and the inflation should be a little bit higher, not struggling. So basically,
this is now after 10 years, who benefits and who suffers?
Yeah, so I was
explaining
that basically the rich people, the wealthy people who are earning a sufficient amount of money, which is now a lower percentage of the population, is getting the benefits from the low rates, and they're investing this money, right? And they're investing into the stock market, and then you have these the prices of stocks that are pretty inflated, while at the same time you have no impact on the inflation because in the general consumption is not, it's not spiked up that much.
Because stocks are inflated once, because you normally discount stocks at a certain interest rate, and when the basic interest rate, the risk-free interest rate,
that's
is low,
also
you have a very low discount factor.
That's from another point of view, exactly. So one factor is that people who have money are the people who have assets, and then when they get these, they get easy money from the bank, they invest into the stocks, so the stock price goes up because of the demand. But at the same time, you have low interest rates, so if you want to predict the present value, you're discounting with a low rate. And then you get higher present value.
And another problem is that it destroys a lot of savings because your long-term savings do not have any yield, and sometimes get eaten up by inflation.
But I would say also one of the reasons why the yields in the bonds are low and negative, for example, would be the political risk that's currently happening. So there is a kind of a divide where a lot of people are investing into bonds, and the yields go down. Right, because the price of the bond goes up.
Yeah.
So when there's a lot of investment in the bond, and bonds are very safe. The bonds are considered a safe haven. So if there is some kind of risk coming on, or if you think there's going to be a crisis, you invest in bonds because it's like U.S. Treasury bonds are the risk-free bonds. So because U.S. Treasury always pays their debt, so when you buy that bond, you know you're going to get paid back. I mean, at least in historical terms.
And the third thing on the negative side that is very subtle but very annoying is when banks give you loans. This is on the bank's balance sheet an asset, all their stuff with which they earn money. That's an asset to them. And when these assets don't yield enough anymore, they are having problems with profitability and lower net income, and to compensate for that, they're fleeing into the fee structure, and they're trying to increase fees for everything or invent fees for stuff.
So basically, what he wants to say is also that whatever interest rates are actually how the bank makes money, right? So the bank charges interest on whatever, and that's their money.
So their interest income.
So if the interest rates are lower, the margins for the banks are lower. So that's why the bank will now go into private accounts. They will creating, like the Merrill and Chase are creating their own bank. Then you have what's it called, Goldman Sachs making their own bank where you can open an account, and they'll hit you with fees because they cannot earn money anymore from interest rates. Right?
Or most regular account vehicles with this regular tiering system that has been introduced, most regular checking accounts don't yield any interest at all. So basically your money gets eaten up by inflation.
So basically, just to make a kind of a resume of what we just said, is that you had the crisis in 2007, 2008. Afterwards, you had the quantitative easing from the central bank, and you have also the government was included in the quantitative easing. You had low interest rates from the central bank. So the central bank was buying assets that were actually junk, shit. They're basically a fraud. But giving cash to banks in order so they have liquidity, because those assets were worth nothing anymore. And then you also had low interest rates, which means that banks could lend out money, and the central bank would lend money to the banks for low interest, and then ideally the bank will charge you low interest, so you'll get money. And the ideal result would be a heat up economy, at the same time inflation, people spending and stuff. But fast forward 10 years, we have an economy that people are saying that's doing good, but on the other side, you see that the wages are not growing. So basically the net incomes are increasing for companies because of tax cuts as well, but the equity markets are hot, but people are not earning more, especially to relation to what are the costs of studying, living. So like the wage growth was, I think, like 8% in 10 years, but then the cost of studying went up by 44%. And then you had also, I think this is in the Bloomberg article that you sent me, remember?
I don't have that right now, let me see.
I will pull it up. Basically, the cost of living are going up while people's wages are not
catching up.
Definitely. And so you have an economy that's kind of hot, but not really benefiting the small guys at all. It's benefiting the rich people. And on the paper, it looks good, but in general, it's not. The income is not distributed properly, and the income inequality is even higher. And this is another reason why you have such a divide between such a polarization. on the political scene. I'm trying to log into our account. Bill.
What?
I mean, I'm trying to log into the account.
So yeah, we are now in 2019.
Yeah. So let me just say this.
Do you have it? Okay.
So the household income went up by 8.4%, right? While college spending went up by, I think, 44%. Medical insurance price went up by 38%, and housing prices went up by 25%, while your wage went up by 8%, right? So you have more money, but that money is affording less and less things because everything, the prices are inflated. Of the price of assets and basically of these things that you could usually afford are inflated. And now we have, we're kind of reaching a point where many European countries have negative yields and interests,
yeah,
right? Basically trying to, which means that if you want to put the money in the bank,
you have to
pay the bank.
Yeah.
And the reason for this is like they don't want, the central bank doesn't want people saving money. They want to increase, to spur spending as much as possible. But again, the low interest rate didn't impact the people who can't qualify for loans. So this doesn't really work.
Even the extreme version, the negative rate version, doesn't work as well because
I don't have money to save anyways.
Yeah, people who don't have loans and we can't get loans also can't be forced to spend when you burn their money because they still don't have money.
Yeah, because also you want to change how I'm handling my money. So you want me not to put the money in the bank and spend it, but I don't have money, so I can't put it in the bank.
Yeah.
I can pay my rent, I can consume what I want, and then in the end of the month I have zero.
Yeah.
So there's not my, even if I change my behavior, it's not really quantifiable because there's no money.
And even in case of companies, it didn't turn out to be investment growth because companies don't have enough projects to invest in, or is it companies don't feel like to invest in. At least a lot of companies are sitting on a lot of cash, and this also, especially in Europe, collides with this whole banking regulation until Basel III and Basel II still, that even if you're relatively well off, you still often don't apply for a proper loan. Or if you're worse off, if you're in the lower average, below the average income, then you're still not applying for a loan. So I would say in Europe there are even more people not affected at all by this negative interest rate stuff because they can't be forced to pay their money to spend stuff.
And I mean, we're not going to go into this, but one of the results that we have in the political scene is this divide between the left and the right, and I personally believe that's directly correlated with what's happening with the economy, because you have people who are very rich and you have people who are very poor, and there's a complete disconnect. And the very rich live, I mean, Boston, New York, the coasts, and then the very poor live in the middle of the country.
You have some nests.
And then you live in completely different worlds, and you have, and we can see this, and we're going to put some graphs, you can see this.
Yeah. There's a direct correlation between high school graduation rates and childhood poverty rates.
Yeah. No, but I want to also say that you can see this basically in how, in the trends of voting in Congress and stuff, how partisan congressmen and Senate people are in voting for their agenda. Well, and now in 2019, we have negative interest rates. What do you think about this, Bill? Germany has negative interest rates.
They still have negative interest rates. The German Constitutional Court is now, I think, not yet suing, but they're investigating.
What's the danger with having negative interest rates if a crisis happens?
That people don't have any savings, don't have any buffer. And at the same time, if the crisis happens and they need to hike interest rates,
then lower interest rates.
If the crisis happens,
you lower
it. Yeah, you lower it even more, but you can't, so it will still not spur economic growth. But if they want to hike interest rates, they even have to now be, they're trapped basically close to the bottom, because if you want to hike it, let's say there's no crisis coming, they just hike it, then you have a growth in default rates because suddenly everything gets more expensive. Car loans, house loans, mortgages here in the US, consumer loans, everything that's floating?
But I think pretty much everybody is, we can't know that they're not going to hike the rates because we're kind of in the 11 years. Usually do this in the beginning of the, like the what's it called, Fed was raising rates at some point, but then they stopped because in Europe the rates were too low, and they don't want to do that because if you have high rates here and very low rates in Europe, all the money is going to go from Europe to
Then you have capital
to, then
inflow,
you have low
capital
euro,
outflow,
strong dollar, and no money in Europe, and then you can create a crisis in Europe, which
a problem that is now partially bound to interest rates is if the US would continue to hike interest rates, then you're becoming the capital magnet, you have more inflow, so dollar becomes stronger, but when you have a stronger dollar, your exports become more expensive, and then you would export less, which would then contribute to a deficit, and then everybody starts complaining again that the US has an even higher deficit.
Yeah, but I think this is just basically a sham. It's they don't really care about export because they don't live from exports. Nothing is manufactured here anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
but it also has made in the US.
Services.
The cake I was buying yesterday, is that made in the US?
Yeah. Maybe they made the cake sign and they put made in the US. Anyways, so conclusion. In terms of having a crisis and negative interest rates, you can't really push them anymore negative. So you don't have this lever that we had in 2009 when the crisis came. The central bank lowered the rates, make debt cheaper, and then it spurred the economy with quantitative easing as well to start growing again. But now you are already doing quantitative easing still in Europe. They're buying bonds, which Mario Draghi is doing with his last thing. They're still buying bonds. And at the same time, you have lower interest rates, so it means when the crisis hits, you don't have this. You can't use this.
Yeah, this lever is gone.
You basically can't stimulate. You can't use steroids this time when you go on the stage, you know?
Yeah.
You can just go without the steroids and you can be a natural bodybuilder, but you're going to look like shit.
Yeah, let's see how this turns out if the crisis hits, because when this lever is not there, maybe we have to then endure one crisis without the lever, and then next time it's
but
back
how
again.
How do you come back? That's the thing. And what to do not to
you
how
could
to redistribute the income is the biggest question.
The thing is, you can get out of the crisis relatively undamaged if you forego wage increase. So normally if the country is doing well and wages should
but you already
rise,
forgone the wage
you can forego wage increase.
But you already forgone the wage increase. It's not there. Compared to whatever all the increases, you're not really increasing.
But it can accelerate it. So the thing is, you have to go through the pain, but it would be over faster. It worked last time.
My theory is that basically these ledgers that usually work in the economy don't work because the pie isn't cut properly. So you have 90% of income in the hands of 1% of the population. So really, when you change these levers, 40% of the population, which is the lowest, doesn't even get affected by it because they're completely out of the economic system.
Yeah,
they don't have any money savings. That so you're lowering interest rates, but like, why would I care when I'm not managing any money? I'm just paying my rent, I'm spending my money, and then I have my salary again, living from day to day. So I'm completely outside of this realm. So you're trying to use the clutch, but like you're only using it on one wheel.
I think we can. Invite for the next podcast all the central bank presidents and see what they have to offer.
Yeah, we were called by Mario Draghi and Cristiano Ronaldo, and they wanted to do a mixed podcast about football and interest rates. I think that would be very exciting for the listeners. You know, how did it impact the penalty kicks?
How high interest rates might increase the yield curve?
Yeah.
Of the football, I don't know. Let's see how this turns out. I have no clue actually.
Yeah, that's the one.
Because the lever is
scary
gone.
Things. And we'll attach a couple of sliders with regards
should
to
should we attach the Ray Dalio article along
we
one?
Can attach everything. There are a couple of good articles you can read if you're interested in this
that
by Ray Dalio, and he really goes into what's the impact on the entire society, the education, why do you get people who are not educated. And then yesterday we kind of connected this to the student loans with people who are not educated about loans or nothing. You don't really care, you just get a loan. And that was the impact in
long
term.
It's one downward spiral or one upward spiral that either makes everything
it's a
worse for
it's
you
mechanism, yeah.
or better for you. Yeah.
Yeah. So
and
I guess
we can also shed some light on the situation in Sweden, how they abandoned it. We can also attach this article.
Yeah. In Sweden, what basically happened, what we were mentioning before, when you have low interest rates, less money is coming into your country because Now people who want to save their money in the bank and put their money in the bank don't want to put it in your bank because you're not paying them anything to put it there, right? So if you have an interest of, let's say, 5% and somebody puts the money in the bank, annually you're paying them 5% and they're happy to keep the money in your bank. But if you have negative interest rates, then it means that they have to pay you to put their money in the bank. And of course, if you have a negative interest rate in Germany and you have a positive interest rate in the United States, the investor or whoever has the money and wants to save it will come to the United States and put their money in the United States bank because they want to get the 2% instead of paying somebody, right? So, and this, when you have this, when you save in a certain country, you have to save in their currency. So like if you want to save in the United States, you have to buy the dollar. And then when you, when many people come to save, put their money in the United States, they have to buy a lot of dollars. The demand for dollars goes up with regards to supply and the value of the, that's why you have a strong dollar currently, because the rates are, compared to other countries, are very high, even though they're not high in general.
Yeah, which is then...
and but that, sorry, but that's why Sweden had a very had a problem with Krona, which basically, I think this year, they lost like 12%. That it's very weak against the dollar and other currencies, and they kind of wanted to stop it from going into like a hyperinflation or something like this, you know, to weaken the Krona even further.
Yeah.
Which can damage the economy, but we won't get much into it. And yeah, they put their interest rates up, but again, it didn't have an impact. So
yeah.
Currently, at least yet. So, anyways, I hope you understood something from what we were talking about, and we were maybe a little bit clear. I don't know.
Less jumping, less time.
Yeah, jumping. Yeah, I mean, we can finish it like this, I guess.
Then, yeah. See you guys.
Have a nice week and...